Cuomo News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
So Steve Sarkisian flies down to Southern California, the Husky football coach meeting with a hot prospect. San Diego guy, just has all sorts of football prowess, great promise as a quarterback, and the trip was not wasted. The UW football coach was able to at least get a verbal commitment from this guy. Part of the issue there is he can't get a written commitment. He can't get a promise. He can't sign a letter of intent, mostly because he's still in the eighth grade. Tate Martell is the guy we're talking about, is all of 14 years old. 14 years old. There was one other kid also. In fact, Tate Martell is friends with the guy, another guy by the name of David Sills. He committed to USC in 2010. He was all of 13. This, you know, I'll tell you, this is extremely rare. It's not something that you hear about a lot. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't think it's anything that should be encouraged. In fact, I think it should be prohibited. Yeah, it's a non-binding commitment. The kid can change his mind. But what you're doing, I mean, these kids are at an age where, come on, this is supposed to be fun. This isn't going to be your lifelong career. They, in a certain sense, at least in my mind, it feels as if they are robbing these kids of part of their childhood, part of their teen years. 13 and 14 years old, it's certainly gratifying. You know, it's certainly, you know, to be recruited by a college coach, to have the University of Washington football coach fly down to Southern California to get a verbal commitment that you will get a full scholarship when you are of age. I mean, hell, I'm impressed. But I don't know what his folks are thinking. If it was my kid, no way on God's great green wonderful earth would I have agreed to that meeting. Tom Flick, former University of Washington quarterback, former NFL quarterback, joins me here on Newsline PM. How are you, Tom?
Ken, I'm fine. How are you today? Thanks for having me.
I appreciate your being here. Do you think I'm out of my mind or what?
No, I don't think you're out of your mind. It's just so odd to hear someone being offered a scholarship at the age of 14, so it's an anomaly.
But, you know, but these things have a way of taking on, of getting a life of their own. And so you've got coaches all over the country going, what the hell is this? Sarkisian goes down there. He's got this 14-year-old kid. Man, I'm going to Texas. I'm going to catch me some of those Friday Night Light players and see if I can get one. I know one that's 12 years old looks really hot.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, it's a long time between now and when you really are 18 years of age and ready to leave high school and go play college. So many, many things can happen. So I see a lot of risk in that. Although when I was a young kid, gosh, Ken, probably the age of 11, I committed that I was going to be a pro quarterback in the NFL and really got focused on it long before kids became specialized in sports as they do now.
Hey, at 8, I was going to be a rocket scientist. At 12, I was going to be a shortstop. I mean, you go through, yeah, how do you commit to yourself? I mean, those are the dreams. Those are the fantasies of growing up, aren't they?
They are, but, you know, some kids may... I know that I gave my baseball mitt away to my baseball coach, and I was the peg starting pitcher and said, hey, I'm giving this sport up. I want one throwing motion, and I'm going to be a pro quarterback in the NFL, and left my glove on his desk. So it was a little bit different than someone kind of wishfully thinking. I put a plan in place at a young age, but I loved it. I think the key for this young man is that, is he a great athlete? Does he love football because his dad's behind him and or some family member pushing him to do it? I know that my father was never like that. My dad was very supportive but never expected things from me. I owned all of that. So for me, it was a great experience moving forward. But you've seen Todd Marinovich and those types of young kids that are really out in the front of the competition as far as their athletic ability, and they flame out. It's just they can't. There's no staying power in it.
Well, from what I've read, and there's a great story in the Seattle Times, Bob Condotta, who put this story out there. And within the story, he talks about when this kid, this Tate Martell, was like 3 or 4 years old, he used to draw up plays and mail them to Marty Schoenheimer.
Well, you gotta be kidding me.
No. So I think that he probably does have an undying love for the sport of football. But even given that, I guess my reservations, particularly as a parent, because, you know, it's one thing for, you know, Tom Flick or Tate Martell to commit to this on their own and know that they're working towards this as a goal. But to have somebody like Sarkisian go in there and interpose and bring that dream to a level of fruition that's just nuts at 14 and 13 years old, that's a wholly different thing.
I would agree. Listen, I love Steve, and I think what he's done with you, we all think very highly of him and respect him greatly, and he's great for the program. It is a little bit strange. I think, you know, they've got rules in the NBA about when kids can be drafted, and they have it in all other sports, and, you know, that would be something that someone would look at and say, you know, that's just an age that you've crossed the line and have that kind of rethought. It's odd. It's just so strange to think that somebody would be able to be projected to play at that level, at, you know, at the age of 14. But certainly this kid might be a prodigy like a Tiger Woods, and those are few and far between.
Well, I was looking. Apparently there's a kid over in Ephrata, 14 years old, and he's made a verbal commitment to play basketball at WSU. So, I mean, it's like, and I think that's where my caution comes in. Is that, you know, and I think the NBA is entirely different because there you can get kids right out of high school. You don't have to wait for college. But although it's rare, I think, and you can do the same in football, can't you? But it's more rare.
Yeah. Has anyone jumped from high school to the NFL? I don't know if that's happened. I think maybe once, if I can. But I remember, Ken, watching Quinn Snyder, who played at Mercer Island, who ended up being a coach, NBA, not an NBA coach, but a college coach at Iowa. And other places, but I went back. I remember saw him play a high school game. I think he was a junior. I knew right away that kid was special. I saw Clint Richardson play, who ended up going to Seattle U and then to the Philadelphia 76ers. Saw him play as a junior and senior. He was older than I, but went and saw him play and thought, well, the guy scored 45 points in a high school game, playoff game. And I thought, well, that guy is just unique. And granted, each of those kids were older. You know, they weren't 14, but I know that they were stars when they were at the younger age of 12 and 13 and 14, they stood out more than their peers.
I remember, you know, because I was born and raised in the Bronx, and, you know, back in the day, Lou Alcindor played for Power Memorial. Lou Alcindor becoming, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And everybody knew he was going to wind up as a professional basketball player, but I don't think anyone would have dared at the time approach him while he was in high school or eighth grade.
No, but, you know, again, that's what, four decades ago. And yeah, things are just different. The world is different. How you and I see things and perceive things and the social media effect and how people communicate now is so different than it was just 10 years ago. I mean, none of that stuff even existed. And it's Steve, everything. Coach Sarkisian, coming out of the woodwork and making a play like that just seems to be so different than what the norm has been.
I totally agree. Tom Flick, former NFL quarterback, you're not a former Husky. You're always a Husky, aren't you?
Yeah, that's a great clarification, Ken. Thank you. Always a Husky.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Good talking with you.
Thank you, Ken. Have a good day.
All right, you too. All right, I'm putting this out there for you. 206-421-1000, 877-397-COMO. What do you think about a 14-year-old eighth grader being recruited for college football?
You've heard what's happening. Now, find out what it means to you. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
So we get UW football coach Steve Sarkisian flying down to Southern California and verbally recruiting a kid who's still in the eighth grade. He's 14 years old. USC did it back a couple of years ago with a 13-year-old recruiting him for the football team at USC. You've got a kid over in Ephrata who was 14 years old when he made a verbal commitment to play at Washington State University about 5 years ago. I mean, I think it's rare, but I think that once other coaches begin observing how this is transpiring and what takes place, and these are non-binding, but I think more and more, we're going to wind up seeing more and more of this happening. And I'm thinking, you know, when I was talking with Tom Flick, I said, you know, as a parent, I would never have allowed that. As a dad, I would have said, no, you're not meeting my 13, 14-year-old kid to offer him a scholarship. You know, call back in 3 years. when he's a junior or a senior in high school. And if could you imagine having to tell that to your kid, that you told a coach like Steve Sarkisian that you said no? There, that would be – what a horrible decision to have to try to make. 206-421-1000-877-397-COMO. Or am I making too much of this? I'm just thinking that we're stealing parts of these kids' childhood. Dee Dee and Graham, you're up on Newsline PM. Thanks for calling.
Hey, I think it is a big deal. I have an 11-year-old. He just turned 11. He's 190 pounds, solid, 5'5". There have been several people that want it, but I just think it's up to the parents to instill some kind of values. It's good to play football. He comes from a football family, but you also have to instill this is fun, even though you're super good, you have natural talent. It's a goal that you are trying to attain later in life, not now.
Hey, back up here for me for a moment. You're saying your 11-year-old son has been approached by college scouts?
No, but he's good enough where, okay, here, okay, we don't want you to play for this team, but can you come play for this Pop Warner team or, you know.
Oh, I see. Okay. Know, no, I got you.
And he's only 11. But it happens all the time, but it's really up to the parents to stay grounded. I mean, okay, you have school. And it happens all the time. They go over to Samoa, where my husband's from. They pull these kids. They bring them to Texas. They bring them to Washington. They promise their parents. And these kids are young. They're 12, 13, playing out there barefoot, real football. So it goes on now. It's been going on. And they're young kids. And they bring them out to Texas, and they enroll them in these schools.
All right. Thank you, Dee Dee. I appreciate the insight. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
All right. Take care. I guess it's just mind-blowing. I can't figure where a parent – I mean, it's one thing – you know, Tom Flick was saying, hey, look, I knew I wanted to be an NFL quarterback. That's very different than, you know, he knew that. He worked towards it. That was his goal. He set his sights on that. And everything he did was geared toward becoming what he wanted to be. There's a big difference between that and having, a UW football coach drop in your lap and say, I want a verbal commitment from you. I'm going to give you a full ride scholarship. This kid probably hasn't even had a first date yet, and he's already got a college scholarship and a verbal commitment to attend the University of Washington. 206-421-1000 is the local line. Ron in Olympia, you're up on Newsline PM.
Yeah, Ken, I think this is from desperation, actually, now that I think about it. It's,
why desperation?
Well, Washington hasn't beaten Oregon in 9 years. They're pulling out all stops. Anything they can do to beat the Mighty Ducks, I just think it's desperation on the part of the athletic department at UW.
I like where you're going with this, Ron, and I appreciate the call. But I got to tell you, I can't picture Steve Sarkisian saying, "Man, I want to kick those ducks' butts." And there's this 14-year-old down in California that if I can get a hold of him in 10 years, I'll have him nailed. I don't quite think that's – although I think it's the premise of what we're talking about. I think it's the basics, and it just – it really disturbs me because let the kids have some fun for crying out loud. Ken in Bellevue, you're up on Newsline PM. What do you say?
Hi, Ken. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Well, I'm of college age, and I'm currently out of work, been out of work for a while. I think these days, especially considering the economy and how, you know, kids my age are doing, I really think, you know, younger ones could use a leg up.
Well, I, you know what? I know what you mean, and I see where you're going, and while I don't disagree with you, I don't think that this should be the leg up. What does that tell a kid at 13, 14 years old? You don't have to worry about grades. No sweat, man. You've already got a college scholarship locked down. You don't have to, you know, continue to work hard. I just think you're stealing part of this kid's young life. I really do. And I can't agree with it, and I won't shut up about it.
Time to discuss, dissect, and debate the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on KOMO News Radio.
I'm so glad you're here with me this afternoon on this Thursday as we plod through another session of Newsline PM. Appreciate you being here. How bad has the economy been? It has been so bad that 20 and 30-somethings who had decided, well, you know, We'll wait till things perk up a little bit before we have a baby. Guess what? Yeah, I'll tell you in a moment.
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Young people are not having babies. Well, young people are not having babies at the rate they used to have babies. And, you know, a lot of people saying, well, you know, they're just cautious. No, I think it's uncertainty with the economy, the turmoil that has been, you know, the past few years here and everything. And, you know, they're getting out of college with huge debts. It's hard to find a job, hard to find the job that you want, hard to find the job that pays you. So people who would normally be starting a family are perhaps postponing it. And, you know, I think that the possibility, once you postpone having the first kid, then you're really going to get into making a decision as to whether or not there's going to be a second or maybe even a third. Sam Sturgeon is the president of Demographic Intelligence, joins me here this afternoon on Newsline PM. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Ken.
So no babies or fewer babies being born.
I don't know that I would say no babies, but definitely
fewer.
Yeah. Down a little over 8% from the peak in 2007.
Is that a precipitous drop in terms of, that seems very, very significant in terms of a statistical number.
That is, over a four-year period, that is a fairly significant drop.
So what is, you know, you start looking ahead, you start thinking, okay, at what point is that going to have an impact on schools and school funding and new schools and the need for teachers and college educations? You start rolling in different things. And you really get the sense that this is a far more panoramic view that has to be taken.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because with these lower cohorts, none of those have hit schools yet, but that's likely to happen in, you know, short order.
So are we looking at a declining population?
Overall, no, because I think immigration will still match, because you can immigrate at any age. So immigration will still match kind of a decline in birth. But we are, for the first time in a long time in the U.S., below replacement fertility.
So now what does that mean?
So we're having fewer if we were to stop immigration completely and just continue with the current birth rates, then yes, our population over time would be smaller.
So are we it sounds to me like you're saying we're going to look at immigration to replenish the U.S. population.
If current fertility trends continue, correct, we would have to do that, at least to replace the workers.
Well, okay, then the next question is, if the economy begins to improve, do you anticipate the fertility rate to go up? Will more people say, okay, fine, I got the job, I can start paying off my college loans, I can move out of the house that I've been in here with mom and dad, who've been helping me out, helping us out. Does that indicate something more promising for the future then?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because when you ask women what's their ideal family size, that hasn't changed much, even in light of the economic downturn. So it looks like the demand for children has remained the same. The question for us is, we're not sure under this new economic situation what it would take for these younger people of prime childbearing age to feel like it's a good time to have a child.
You know, I had to laugh when you said, you know, the demand for children. It's almost like we're talking about a product, the demand for televisions, the demand for new cars, the demand for better fashions. I was just struck by the language that you used to kind of put this into some kind of perspective. It made me laugh a little bit. So who convinces them? Did they convince themselves? And are we placing too much emphasis on the economy as the cause and effect of what's going on?
Yeah, that's an interesting question that I can't say that we've looked at directly with regard to who makes that decision for them. But we do know that one of the stronger predictors we found, at least recently, is people's perspective on their own economic situation, especially where they think they'll be a year from now. That as that declines, births tend to decline. With regard to the other part of your question, are we overstating the economy? We find that the economy, or at least people's perceptions of the economy, tends to be a pretty strong predictor, or at least it has been in recent years.
So what about then, so what of the folks who got out of college, got their career kickstarted, earning good money, are they having the babies? Or is it across the board that people, you know, are saying, let's hold off for a little while?
Yeah, what we kind of find is that people that were hit harder by the economy were also the most likely to decrease their fertility. So it's kind of like a typical recession. It hits some people much harder than others.
Okay.
If you lose your job, it hit you much harder than someone maybe that just experiences, maybe a lost raise or something like that at their place of work. So it's kind of the same thing here. Those that held on to their jobs, it looks like their fertility declined only a little bit, whereas it declined quite a bit for those that were hit by the economy.
Well, I'm going to go home tonight and tell my wife that it is now our civic duty to have another kid. She's got to get pregnant again.
And, you know, that's a good decision for you and your wife to talk about and make. Our data doesn't, say much for what an individual should do.
Okay. All right, Sam Sturgeon, President of Demographic Intelligence, I appreciate talking with you. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. Thank you, Ken.
All right, take care.
Bye.
You know, I think that I think Sam, President of Demographic Intelligence, not exactly. I think he and I were not exactly in tune in terms of my sense of humor there. But I just wound up curious that, because I think you can break this out in terms of economic achievement or, where you're at in terms of your career. Because I'm going to guess that the 20 or 30 somethings who have postponed having kids, those couples, because of the economy, because they, they have this huge college debt, they can't find the career, they can't get started in the career that they thought they were going to have. Those are the people that you understandably go, they're waiting. They want to be responsible. They don't want to bring another person into the world and not be able to provide for them. But if someone has already, started their career and they're economically chugging along, I don't think that those are the types of people that are also then going to make that type of a decision. But on top of that, I think that there's a whole different view of how many children, a family should have. It used to be two or three, I think was pretty much average, two or three kids. I think it's now down to perhaps one or two kids. I think there are a lot of couples who are quite content to have a child and provide, what they can for that child, and they make a decision not to have a second or a third child. I think three children or five-person families are becoming more rare today than they were, say, 25 years ago. I think 25 years ago, having three kids was probably fairly standard. I'm just anecdotally, just the sense that, the people I work with, the people I know, the neighborhood you live in, you can see the decline in the size of those families. And I think that an average family is probably going to constitute, a husband, wife, and one or two kids. I think that's what it's going to come down to. In a moment, we're going to talk with City Councilman Bruce Harrell. Apparently, we've got some kind of a breakthrough agreement that has been put on the table between the Seattle Police Department and the Department of Justice. Coming up on the deadline here was the 31st. We'll see what we can find out about that in a moment.
This is Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Well, we've been hearing this all afternoon, that some sort of agreement has been reached between the Department of Justice and the Seattle Police Department. This has been a very contentious time. In fact, I've spoken with some Seattle police officers who, believe it or not, were actually hoping that there would be a suit filed against the Seattle Police Department because there are many of the officers, well, at least those that I've spoken with, who believe that that would answer a lot of questions that they have about the DOJ study that was so critical of the manner in which Seattle police have been conducting themselves. And it's not, mind you, this is not that police were saying that there was not legitimacy to some of what the DOJ found in its investigation, but they wanted to look at the methodology and they wanted more information, you know, that things that had not yet been provided by the DOJ. At any rate, the deadline for this was the 31st of this month. We're sitting here on the 26th, so coming in under the wire here is this tentative agreement. I don't know if it's completely finalized. I don't know what the council's going to do with it or when the council's going to get a hold of it. But we got Bruce Harrell here, Seattle City Councilman. He can hopefully fill in at least some of the blanks. How are you, Bruce?
Just fine, Ken. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you taking time to talk with me here. So what have we got?
So I didn't hear this setup, but I guess the question is there an agreement
right.
in place between the Department of Justice and the mayor? So as I understand it, a tentative agreement has been reached. It hasn't been signed. There are some technical details that need to be completed. I've not seen an agreement. I'm to be briefed on it this evening and actually to be able to look at an agreement. So that's sort of where we stand. And in terms of the specifics inside the agreement, I haven't been given any details on that, whether what the cost would be, whether there's a special monitor or any of that.
Is this something that the council as a whole would have to sign off on?
You know, typically, this decision is reached by the mayor and the city attorney, and it doesn't require legislation passed by the city council. It's like any other lawsuit. The city attorney has to notify us, but does not need our consent.
So do we have any idea as to, you know, because having spoken with Pete Holmes, for example, he's been somewhat critical of the manner in which the mayor has handled this. I don't then anticipate that he was involved in these last-minute negotiations to finalize whatever a tentative agreement has been reached.
No, I don't believe Peter Holmes himself was actually involved in the negotiations. I do believe at least one, perhaps two of the attorneys in his group were part of the discussions that report to him. And you're right, you may recall that he did write a fairly scathing letter to the mayor. It wasn't so much a legal analysis as it was, I thought, an advocacy letter for a consent decree where he pointed out a lot of the flaws and sort of how the mayor had approached this issue.
So what are the whispers in the hallway? Because there's always whispering in the hallway.
There are a lot of whispers going on, and the whispers are that, and again, I talked to the mayor one-on-one this morning. He was being very coy on it. Of course, he just wanted to contain any information getting out, but it's that there's an agreement in place. It met the needs of the Department of Justice in terms of unreasonable force, and it met the city's need to sort of have these kind of accountability procedures in place, but it's not going to break the bank. And what I've said publicly and privately is I don't think the police department, both rank and file and any of the command staff, were actively involved in any of this. And so how this is socialized to the department is going to be critical toward the success of the department, and that's ultimately what we're trying to have is the success of the police department.
All right, so we can expect to get probably full details on this sometime tonight or perhaps tomorrow at the latest?
Yes.
All right. Well, we may be talking with you again then.
Okay, Ken.
Thank you. Bruce Harrell, Seattle City Councilman. Appreciate the time. Thanks.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Well, we'll find out. It doesn't appear, you know, I don't know. If you kind of read between the lines the way this has been going, it sounds as if there was some perhaps last-minute compromising that reached what is now being described as a tentative agreement. So, and when I say tentative, it just means that, you know, the signatures have not been placed on it, all the T's haven't been crossed, and all the I's have not been dotted. But the council will be briefed on this. They have no action to take on it. This is something between the Seattle City Attorney's Office, the Office of the Seattle Mayor, and the Department of Justice, as represented by the U.S. Attorney Jenny Durkin here in Seattle, Western Washington. So we'll find out what the restrictive or less restrictive nature of this agreement is tomorrow. Once that becomes available, if there's something that is released this afternoon, you can certainly depend on Jane and Tom to provide you with that information in during the newscast here that's coming up. So, I mean, it's not like you're going to get lost or that information is going to get lost here.